thinking about coming to Sesshin. I usually imagine how quiet and still and serene this setting is. And it is that way, but in the position of visiting with everybody, it's amazing how much is actually going on. And I think we were talking earlier about silence and about practice. And I was thinking about yesterday we were talking about, somebody brought up about like how to practice, and it's this kind of repetition of you know, we have instruction of how to sit, how to hold our mind, and so on, and so we keep coming back to that, and then we let go and we move into some other activity, and we later in the day or the next month we return to this instruction and apply it again. And so in that way we talk about practice, Buddhist practice. I was thinking, because this word kind of started to annoy me a little bit, and there's a kind of sense of for lack of a better time reference, years of practice in which this form and of both body and mind permeates through and through. So whether you're, it's like almost like you can write your own instructions at that point, maybe. You know how to do it. How to hold your body and how to take care of mind. How to address things that come up. And it becomes a way. So it becomes Buddha's way that you're manifesting and actualizing, rather than practicing something. Some words still, you know, you read something, maybe of Dogen is a particularly good example. What's he talking about? But many of the teachings in the The words are very accessible if you read them from this sort of permeated sense, like you. It doesn't take years, it's just each time you sit, when you sit sincerely, it's like you're immersed in it. So it isn't contained by anything. So my wish is that we wouldn't think about practice, but think about enacting the way. And I sincerely feel that the bottom line or the foundation point is Zazen. As Dogen called it, the king of samadhis. The implication in part being it's not the only samadhi, but it's the king of samadhis. It's the supreme expression of being. And but this samadhi in general, this samadhi when we rise up from our zazen should not cease. And so we carry our focus and concentration, regardless of where we seem to find ourselves.
I just want to address the word practice, because for me, for a long time, I would think of it, we use it in different ways, actually, because sometimes practice is like, I go out and I'm, practicing hitting the baseball, so when I'm really in a game, we call that practice, or I'm practicing the piano, so when I go and do my concert, practice. But we use practice in another way. And I think that's the way you're looking at our use of it. I'm not sure. But we also use practice in a way that means, this is my profession. This is what I do. A doctor has his practice. He's not practicing, he's not trying to learn how to do his medicine. That's kind of weird because you're always practicing. But this is what he does, Or, it's my practice to come up to Jikoji from time to time and sit as Zishin, or it's my practice to do whatever things I practice. It's my practice to wash my hands before I eat. It's what I do. And so I think that might carry, maybe at some point my mind changed, because the word practice bothered me a lot too. And I didn't know why, but then when I realized there's a little shift when you go from one meaning to the other, I found.
I guess the distinction I'm trying to make is that there isn't a break between practicing this and practicing at work, at working, or practicing at driving your car. The practice of driving the car, if you will, versus the practice of Buddhism. It's all of a way, is what I'm saying, that there is a way of continuity, practice tends to connote that there's a break in it, regardless of, I understand what you just said, but there's the tendency for this, when I hear it, I feel like people are making that distinction between, like, coming to practice, and then it ends, and then I'm doing something else. So I'm encouraging that there be, whatever word you use, that there be this sense of continuity, ceaseless continuity.
Practicing all the time.
Yeah. If you want to call it like that.
Well, since we did get lucky with that word, you know, you read literature and you see why that word. So.
Well, I'm reminded of Robert Thurman wrote something like, tired of this word practice. I want to hear about actualization. So. I think, you know, like people who study other, you know, martial arts or like tea, when you're immersed in it, you don't like stop. It never leaves you. It's always emanating from you. But I'm not talking about like trying to do that. I'm just saying that in our day-to-day life, I find in my very busy work environment that it's very much like sitting zazen, actually. Different environment, but the way the the response to what appears is the same for me. There's things appear and you let it be, acknowledge it, let it be, give it space. There's no. So with the, you know, it gives you the opportunity to practice those various attributes to which we aspire, patience, charity, things like that.
When we sit here at Jokoji, primarily people here from Koban's lineage or Katagiri's lineage or close, having been in this flat program recently, there were about, primarily it was a Suzuki Roshi and Koban lineage, and somebody from Spirit Rock and things, but it was really interesting to have the different people come together and mingle. Because when it came to ceremony, when it came to sitting, when it came to interacting, it was to have a wide variety of ways that people have done it, quite nice. And to have four Zen masters leading this thing, and usually you worship your teacher. That is the way. And then you see another teacher or somebody else, they don't know what they're doing. So we have all these, actually five teachers, because one of them died, Darlene, and to see how each one manifested their way was totally different, each one. And four of them were in the Suzuki lineage, and they were, and you try when you're at Tassajara to see that everybody's different, and so all we can do is be ourselves. So we're manifesting ourselves. But it was really encouraging to me to see every way is the right way, almost, or it can be, so long as it's kind and sincere.
I was talking with somebody recently at Hokoji who came to visit for a day and sit with us, and he was from the Rinzai lineage, and his teacher just died. Didn't talk about him so much, but he commented that his teacher knew of Koban and said, "Very soft, very soft," and but in a way that that showed respect for Koban, that that very soft was a respect for the Soto tradition, but in the Rinzai tradition it may not, you may not see kindness in the same form. It might be hidden beneath a stick.
I don't know if this came from Koban, but Michael says this often. He says practice is like walking in the mist. You'll never get rained on, but eventually you'll be drenched. And to me, to someone to be drenched in their practice is doesn't matter who their teacher is. It's what I experience being next to them that's kind of like a gift, like the softness or the space or being able to rest. You know, like working with Jiro in the garden and moving 400-pound rocks or hanging out with different people or you you know, the way you hold space for us, and the way we hold each other in moments and hold other people when they're just coming into the space, like, that's it. That's, to me, like, really the most important thing. But that's why I really appreciate when you come and do the Sashin's, and I always make it up here because I like the way, like, I learn just by experience, not, you know, just by being around you and others and whatnot. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I found it very moving to watch you take hold of the teacher stick at the very beginning of your talk, and you said, you know, hold on tight. And it's very moving because I think we're having some ordinations coming up and Shiso ceremony, and I found it really interesting to consider the fact that the sort of culminating aspect of our way is teaching. And in a way it's a bodhisattva movement to teach, to share the Dharma, to embrace the world. To enter back into the world and bring this teaching. And yet it's when you said, you know, hold on tight to this stick, some of us who have had the honor of sitting in that seat, I know I can speak for myself that it is terrifying sometimes, because it just is. Perhaps you can say a little bit more about teaching and how it is for you. And Doug brought up all these teachers that we look to for guidance. And it's a very challenging and sometimes terrifying place to be. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, I think different people have different abilities in terms of formulating a talk. I think I was talking to you about the types of talks that I heard about, which might be worth repeating, that in, well, in brief, read an article about the types of talks in Japan that most, according to this article, most Japanese priests give a kind of talk at a gathering that's at a ceremony of some sort, and it's usually to lay people, and they give some sort of inspiring or feel-good talk about Buddhism. And then there's another type which is more scholarly, you know, breaking down a piece of a sutra or something. And then there's the third type, which is speaking from zazen. And that type is rarely done in Japan, apparently, these days. Although I can think of some teachers that are doing that. But in the United States, our Dharma talks, when somebody says, I'm going to give a Dharma talk, or I'm going to hear a Dharma talk, that's the expectation for the most part, that it be genuine, speak directly from the place about which you are speaking, zazen practice. The actualization, the verbal actualization of this and it's very difficult to initially, I think in this case it does take practice, and to speak authentically or to feel that you're really saying something about Buddha mind or about Buddha nature or about the Buddha bodies and these kinds of subjects, you know, they're difficult to talk about without tripping over a discriminating way of saying it. And I know early on when I was asked to give a talk, I could say maybe a couple words. It was 20 years ago or something. And because it's hard to it's hard for me to articulate personally, but it's hard to articulate this subject. It's not so hard to talk about, but it's hard to say it truthfully. So when I now, anyway, when I think about giving a talk, I try and have a kernel of subject, but I don't spell it all out. Or if I do, I look at it and put it in my sleeve and forget about it. And just feel the, get your posture correct and your breath aligned with your posture, and you speak from there. Sometimes more successfully than others, but it's not meant to be a kind of entertainment. It's the attempt is to speak about a very intangible or nearly intangible subject that is very elusive to speak about it truthfully. No, it's beyond right and wrong. It's beyond that kind of discrimination. And then sometimes I find in talking that way that really people just want to hear about how to practice, how to hold their body and what to do with their breath and what to do with thoughts that come in and out. I think, oh, I was talking about trying to talk. I think I have to address you know, like as far out as I can go, kind of. It's more fun that way for me.
Teaching is, I didn't go to SPOT to become a teacher, but a lot of people there are going to be teachers. And one of the intentions of that was to have peers. That it's really important as a teacher to have peers, to be able to call and say, hey, I got a problem, what do I do with this guy or this gal? This and this is happening, and what would you do? And they can get, you know, you can. So it's important for us to connect and be, share our experiences and support each other. And not get trapped into the, what I guess often happens with inner people that are intent on a spiritual practice to follow a guru. You know, there's the whole worship aspects. I don't see that as an element of in our Zen practice. It may exist, but it seems to be discouraged. And I know Kogan discouraged it, as we found out last summer, where one woman asked him at a Dharma talk, I worship you, or I adore you. And he said, no! And she just was struck, you know, like, you don't want my adoration. You know, it was like it perplexed her. She didn't know how to. But Kogan didn't want that, because we have to do it ourselves. And so to get trapped in a hierarchical thing, where the only person that matters is one with a brown one of these things, everybody else doesn't matter. I mean, basically, you're forgetting the leper and the drunk. And so, how to not be ensnared with that?
One thing, my friend who's an acupuncturist and a kendo instructor, we both ended up, interestingly enough, we're the same age and had similar upbringings, and were asked to be teachers at the same time in our respective disciplines. And I was talking to him about, and this word sensei comes up, which is translated as teacher, but it really is like just someone who a few steps ahead on the path and maybe can help a little bit. So it's not like this exalted position. And leaving that subject, I wanted to, especially as you mentioned, in light of these ordinations and Fuso ceremony, that I reflect, keep talking about Koban, which I use it as a reference point. We could say it without him being involved as well, but it's, I noted very keenly with him that in his giving precept ceremony to various people and to of both types, that there was a kind of faith that he had in that person. And there was, my sense is that there was a potentiality for that person and for that ceremony that was somewhere in time and space, that it wouldn't necessarily, sometimes the fruition was virtually a continuum with what had happened before and the ceremony and the continuation. And other times I felt that he was doing it with unknown consequences, but that it was done in the deepest faith of that person sort of eventually ripening. And also this, these ceremonies aren't, they're kind of celebration, you know, it's an acknowledgement of, on both sides and both all of the group of confirming this confirming this way as being valid and being true, and we make a ceremony out of it. And we celebrate the, it's like acknowledging each other. But it isn't, there's no, nothing gained. In the case of the Shuso ceremony, we get lob. Lob penetrating questions at the shoe cell. So there is no hierarchy. We're all sitting on the same plane. I do have a friend who loves theater, and at his zendo, he sort of every other year he gets a brighter okeso with a bigger hat and a higher platform.
That's great.
He's like a kid. Yeah. And the other thing about the ordination ceremony, I think, is worth noting that there's this looking back, I guess you could say, towards all the people who have transmitted the way through their life and their breath, and so we acknowledge them as well, and we evoke their presence. And the one fault of this culture is that we tend to always look forward. I think that we don't look back in the same way as other older cultures do. So that's one opportunity we have to do that. We do it frequently with our chanting, but I think it's good to really delve into each of those people, because all that information that we're, the answers to the questions that people have about practice come from them. And you integrate it into your own practice, and then you start to generate your own answers, your own way. But initially it comes from behind us. And in another way, those ancestors are the outer ring of this circle, slightly out of your sight, but they are. They join in with us every time.
So one of those ancestors had very little practice, heard the Diamond Sutra, and then ended up going hanging out and never really entered the Buddha hall or meditation hall much, and was beating around rice for month after month, and he was the one who got the bowl and the robe.
Mm-hmm.
And then also got chased across the countryside and went underground for a bunch of time, pointing. And his story became a sutra, which is pretty amazing. So, I mean, it doesn't take just sitting. You know, we say, well, you must just sit. It's just zazen. So he brought something else to this. Do you have any thoughts on Weining and his way?
He was obviously karmically ripe. And for the rest of us, I think zazen is the foundation of our understanding, I really do. It is for me. I mean, I remember struggling with becoming a young adult and getting out of, you know, I was out of the house at an early age. You know, like, and I found these Buddhist books in Kepler's bookstore. There was about six of them, and I would read them. And, but it wasn't until I sat that some relief occurred. And it goes on from there. But personally, I acknowledge this as the way. That's why I keep coming to Sesshin. I see it as the foundation of practice. I really do. By the same token, I don't think what I was saying earlier, I don't see it as ceasing when you leave this room. So it's like breath, you know, there's the inhalation and the exhalation. You move out. As Koban said one time after Sesshin, now you can sit wherever you go. You know, we were tootling into town to get some beer or something. I mean, but there's no one way to manifest the Buddha Dharma. I was reading something in one of the transcripts that Judy gave, and it was talking about transmission and sort of involved conversation, but the thing that two people recognize as being authentic and true, when it's passed to the next generation, it appears somewhat differently. But the core is the same. I think everyone has different capacities for practice. Some people want to join the monastery and live their life there, you know, and never come out, or in retreat, or as a hermit. And other people are very engaged in the world and also manifest Buddha Dharma. There's no, you can't really pin it down. We have to be careful about that. I'm not making an opinion, but I'm saying that there's the ability to practice in many different ways, but the root is clearly Zazen.
So, from a teacher to a student, when you're looking at your student who's about to be, a student that's about to be ordained, I mean, it's not like you're counting the number of times you sat or you take 100 question tests. You know, it's what is it that a teacher is looking for in that moment? Or, like, what's your view on that, and looking at maybe one of your students and saying, ah, you know, like, ready.
I think everybody's ready. If you've given rise to this and appear here, you're ready. When these ordinations happen, everybody in the room takes part. It's just like, in this case, Zach's going to stand in for all of us. Thank you.
clear, the test has 200 questions.
How many did you get right?
I already got one, but it was the important one.
This ordination isn't precept. Accepting the precepts isn't... it's just like... It's like your birthday or something, you know, you don't stop. It's, you keep going to the next one. Not to diminish its feeling, but it's, you know, because you feel it, it's in your heart, and you aspire to continue. You acknowledge it. It's acknowledging this wisdom is how I see it. Some people, Kogan would just tell them, I know for myself it was like that. But it was after some deep connection with Zazen, and we were talking about it, and he says, we'll have a precept ceremony for you. Okay. Cool. And then, you know, Terry, friend in Hokoji, she sat down and started to talk to him about it. He said, God, I thought you'd never ask, you know, and started telling her all the stuff and how it was going to go and what, pick a date, and, you know, like immediately planning the whole thing. And other times people have to ask. So it varies. But I think everybody here is ready. So we'll have a ceremony and celebrate.
Can we go get that beer?
Everybody's lined up.
That's a good thing.
I met a really great lady, friend of Doug's, Beata. Uh-huh. And she helped me a lot. I think it was over a year ago now. And I was in a lot worse shape physically then than I am now. And, you know, she just had this, I remember saying one time, you know, I meditated in my room, and I got my little, I got my candle lit, and I got my altar. And she's like, you can sit anywhere. You don't have to sit. You don't have to have an altar. Anywhere you are, you can be sitting. How do you, as a different style teacher, I mean, she's a teacher, right? And a priest, right?
She's a priest, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how's that, is that just her opinion? Is it, do you have to sit in the Zendo for it to count?
Sorry, everybody that's been sitting at home alone. Well, we're not counting. Sincere Zazen practice is sincere Zazen practice, wherever it is. In the old days, they sat under trees.
That would be nice to know.
There.
You've got something to choose from here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you all.